This is the Angry GM, and this is the Angry GM's mostly monthly live chat for the month of October in the year of 2022. The first post Angry Games 2022 non-convention live chat. And you can sure as hell bet that I'm going to go ahead and brag about that because it was awesome. And all of you who weren't able to be there, you missed out. Just going to say that. I'm really, but anyway. So, standard, I'm just going to launch in because there's a lot of, we got a lot of stuff. Actually, there's a lot of questions to get to. Which I did both a smart and a stupid thing. But let's jump right to this whole Q&A thing, because some of you may have noticed today, which is October 26th, 2022, you may have noticed that when today's article went live for early access, today's article being entitled something I can't remember, presentation matters, some shit like that. I don't know. It's a bullshit article. I don't even care what it was about. I barely remember it. I wrote it last week. Anyway, When he'll notice, Nox Aeternus is suggesting that Procillus change one letter of his name every few months. He'll notice. He actually notices a lot more than you think he does. Anyway, because I hate change. It's like that old saying goes, never change anything ever. And I have not stopped berating poor Procillus for constantly changing his avatar on Discord. But anyway, that aside, so you may have noticed that when the proofread aloud of the article went live today in the little podcast feed, there was another second podcast that was a Q&A related to the article. So what happens is this. I have started, when I record the proofread alouds, announcing that I am about to record a proofread aloud in the Discord, and then opening up the microphone to a live chat in the Discord so anybody who wants to listen can listen as I record the proofread aloud. And then I have taken to leaving some extra time at the end of the proofread aloud so that I can take some questions and comments from those who have appeared, preferably about the topic of the article. Well, I finally figured out what I think to be a decent way to record those and release them. So now there are two separate podcast feeds. One is the Proofread Aloud podcast itself, and the other is a supplemental Proofread Aloud podcast that is the Q&A portion. And so those will come out as I can manage it. The whole thing does create a little bit more work. So gradually, the amount of time it takes me to go from finished article to published article with audio files is getting a little bit longer, and that's going to have to be brought under some control. Then again, I'm going to talk about some of that too, but that will be the third bullet point, because bullet point the second, that was what we just discussed, was bullet point the first. So bullet point the third is going to be everything is changing. The irony is not lost on me. Bullet point the second is, of course, the Angry Games non-convention. 2 weeks ago, I gathered with three dozen Angryon supporters in Columbus, Ohio, specifically at the Hilton Garden in Columbus, Easton, Ohio, Earth, Solar System, Milky Way, to have a non-convention. I rented a hotel meeting room, had it filled with tables for there to be gaming at, brought piles of board games, invited everybody else to bring piles of board games, and then, because I had delusions of grandeur and wanted to make my non-convention as conventional as possible, also roped a bunch of Angryons into hosting official games like you would play at conventions. And so the Angry Games non-convention actually turned out to be kind of a convention. And honestly, it was awesome. It was exhausting, but it was awesome. So from Friday at 2 was the official start. That was Friday the 14th of October. At 2 was the official start, and the official end was Saturday at midnight-ish. It was actually earlier than midnight, but nobody would leave the meeting room when I told everyone, get the hell out of the meeting room so I can break it down and go to bed because I have to drive to Wisconsin tomorrow. Thanks, guys. Other than that, though, it was a great time. I spent the entire time running role-playing games and board games and trying to make sure that everybody who attended at least got to sit at my table for something. I ran a short, a mini adventure that reprised the characters from Fall of Silver Pine Watch and let that group or let groups explore the town of Hearth after they got Una there. But there were also a bunch of other people who participated and ran games, and I want to take a moment to thank them because they were awesome. And at this point, I've gotten a lot of feedback. Rest assured, if you ran a game at, I haven't been able to pass along all the feedback. It's just been like everybody's been very communicative, and I made it a point. If you attended NonCon, by the way, check your email box because you should have gotten a thank you note from me. I made it a point to send a thank you note to absolutely everyone and to follow up on the things that were followed up on. If you didn't get one, it's probably sitting in your spam folder. But anyway, I want to thank especially Debit Victory on the Discord, who helped me organize the thing and secure the convention space, and he toured the hotel, and you know he opened communication with the hotel, got us quotes, all that stuff. So he was instrumental in making it happen. I want to thank the Tiny GM, my fiance, for of course all of her support, doing various things and running around behind the scenes with me to make everything happen, and also for claiming a table of her own to run nothing but cat-themed board games for people all weekend. And then I especially want to recognize all of the GMs who ran things. So Arthur from the Discord, he ran a couple of sessions of a fourth edition adventure, which it seems like a lot of people enjoyed the opportunity to go back and play fourth edition. The worst edition of D&D to have the best design ever. I've got to come up with a better way to do that. GM Blake, who ran a 5e D&D game called Giant's Bane. GM Danny, Blake is Blemha on the Discord, who ran Giant's Bane. Nox Eternus ran a session of a D&D 5e game called The Bright Swords Barrow that he actually, it's a game he put together himself, but it's not just that, it is also a module that he was planning to share around and has started to share it around in the Discord because, like Fall of Silver Pine Watch, it is designed to help new GMs learn the ropes, but in this case, using some of the lessons from the Mentor Red Box, it is also designed to help GMs learn how to build dungeons. I've started leafing through it because he sent me his notes, and it's a really well put together little thing. So absolutely everybody should check it out. GM Elijah, who is Elijah on the Discord, he ran an Easy D6 game called The Waking of Willoughby Hall. I still don't know anything about Easy D6 other than it seems like a really good convention game and people seem to enjoy it. Queasel, the moderator, was also a GM there and ran two sessions. She ran a Stars Without Number game called Facets that everybody and their brother wanted in on, which even it had a bigger waiting list than the shit I was running. So, Queasel, you have made a dangerous enemy. I do not like being shown up. And also ran the Stillwaters adventure for the Witcher tabletop RPG. Chubby of the Discord, he ran, he did the GURPS game. Yeah, he decided to run GURPS, you know, which is just great for convention play. Though he demonstrated that GURPS in the hands of someone who actually knows how to run GURPS is actually a really good fun game, and it's just GMs who keep fucking it up. But anyway, he ran Yankees travels into a wizardly kingdom inspired by a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court, which I believe transported modern people back to back to that age of history where the dragons were, into like this fantasy world. Let's see, Welk Cycle in the Discord. He ran an adventure called Enter the Spungen, a nautical-themed D&D 5e adventure, I haven't really gotten a chance to check out everything everybody ran because I spent the whole weekend running my own stuff too. Kerning in the Discord taught. He did a couple of board game sessions, showed people Terraforming Mars and Oceans, which were both a big hit, and Oceans was one of those things that I had to keep yelling at people, hey, the session's over, time to clean up. So, and Doug in the Discord ran two sessions of Shadow of the Demon Lord, an absolutely excellent game as long as you remove all the poop jokes. Two sessions, Mountains Roar and When Darkness Falls. I think that was everyone. I think I got all the GMs. If I didn't get you, raise your hand now, but I think I did get everybody there. And there were also like a lot of other people there who were just like, camped out and doing things. Kaisharga from the Discord, he adopted a table of his own and was just sharing some of his favorite board games that he and his significant other brought along with them. And we had a lot of people bring a lot of board games too, which was really nice. We got to meet a lot of people's partners and friends. So it was really a great time. And I had a blast. And would love to do it again next year. Though the reality is, between an angry wedding and the expense of putting on the convention, because I didn't want to charge for tickets. So the whole idea behind this non-convention was I wanted to find a way to do something cool for the community as a way of thanking what people could attend for all the years of support, encouragement, and everything they did. Ohio was chosen because it was reasonably centrally located for a portion of the GMing or of the angry community. I seem to have a lot of representation in the Midwest, Northeast, and Mid-Atlantic states. And it was still fairly accessible to me. I would love to be able to do something like this again. It is likely not in the cards in a year, but in 2 years, probably be able to do it again. So there was that. Anyway, it was a great time. Tiny has been posting pictures from it in the Discord, in the TTRPG play discussion, and that's it. I just wanted to take the time to thank everybody who helped make it a great experience for everyone who was there. And that done. Okay. Serious stuff now. And bullet point the third. And also related to, by the way, the non-con. So here's the thing. Turns out running a convention, even a tiny one, is not the easiest thing in the world. Especially when you're managing it and also running, it was like 18 hours straight of games while you're also managing the convention and getting things set up. And it was a really, really small operation. It took a lot more time than I thought, and it took a lot out of me. And I'm still kind of in recovery mode, believe it or not. And it did consume most of the time in the 4 weeks leading up to it. So it was a huge undertaking, and I didn't realize that it would be, because I'm human and I'm stupid, right? So we all assume anything we've never done before is easy to do. Anything we don't know how to do, we think we'll be able to learn it and do it very easily. So yeah, that was my own stupidity again. And there were a lot of little things that just cropped up that didn't even occur to me until they cropped up and had to be dealt with. So that said, there are a lot of things coming. There's a lot that I want to do, and in a lot of ways, non-con and actually getting a chance to game in person for a while, you know, with people instead of doing everything online, which is the worst way to run games, has sort of reinvigorated and re-energized me a bit, and it's forcing me to re-examine some projects that I'm working on. There's a lot that I would like to do, especially with the new year approaching, and especially, of course, with November approaching and a very particular date in November. I'm not ready to discuss a lot of that stuff yet because I'm still kind of putting things back together and then deciding what, where the, how the pieces should go back together. Okay. But I do want to take a moment to discuss a couple of, things that have been like, let's call them elephants on the battlefield. Okay, things that have been noticed because people have noticed that changes are starting to happen already. Okay, first, I want to make a formal announcement to the angry community regarding town mode. And I think I did a semi-announcement in one of the Discord chat or channels a little while ago, but this is actually sort of the like the official announcement now. Town mode is not dead. Town mode is coming back. Okay, but town mode cannot continue the way it was continuing. Because on analysis, town mode has to happen differently. Okay, and it's like, it's something I should have known when I set out to do it. Okay, but when you get down to it, when you are building a mode of play, okay, when you look at a mode of play in a role-playing game like Dungeons & Dragons, say combat, for example, modes of play are generally, it's not a system in itself, okay? There's no system that you would say, okay, this is the mode of play. Town mode is this system, or even combat is this system. I know that sounds crazy that you wouldn't say combat is a system, but when you really think about it this way, it's not. Instead, the pieces that make up combat consist of two things. One is specific applications of general rules that already exist. So, for example, the attack roll is a specific kind of ability check that mostly comes up in combat, but can also be made outside of the combat framework. Okay? Anytime someone swings a pointy stick at someone else, you can use an attack roll to resolve the result. Same with a damage roll. I mean, I wouldn't use attack rolls and damage rolls out of combat except in very specific situations, and GMs who do that, they drive me crazy. Like, if someone sneaks up behind the guard and wants to bonk them on the head or knock them out or whatever, I don't say, okay, make an attack roll, because that's ludicrous. But nonetheless, the point stands that, you know, most of combat is just specific applications of rules that already exist. And then there's usually a few rules that are written specifically for the mode, generally, they're structural elements. So something like initiative. Initiative gives structure to combat. It does not by itself define combat mode, but it is something that generally only exists in combat mode, and the rules for initiative are specific to combat mode. Okay, so a mode of play consists of specific applications of rules that exist, and usually a few special rules that exist just for that framework. And the smaller the number of special rules, the better off you are. When I started writing town mode, I was thinking of it as a design approach. Like, if I just build a town and run it the right way without anything special, then town mode could do all the things I said town mode could do. But when I started looking at the proto-town mode that I was already using in my games, because, you know, my games already do spend some time in town, and I've been trying to make that experience better. When I started looking at that, I realized I'm doing a lot of stuff that, I mean, I don't do it mechanically rigorously because I pull a lot of mechanics out of my ass when I need them at the table. But nonetheless, I'm doing a lot of things that the rules actually don't support, don't encourage, don't allow. I don't even know what to say about it other than the fact that there's a bunch of little mechanical bits that need to exist to make town mode work. Because I just make them up at my table, they do exist for me, but then trying to tell you how to run town mode without giving you those mechanical bits you're not going to be able to do it. Okay. And then, obviously, with this is, of course, with the caveat that all of my mechanical bits are meant for you to get sick of and stop using and just pulling out of your ass eventually anyway, but nonetheless. So that's where town mode stands. But town mode created a sort of existential crisis in me as the angry GM about how I was approaching these big projects. And it has not escaped anyone's notice that my big projects and series tend to go in one of two directions. Either they get completed in a, you know, very quickly, or they die forever halfway done. And neither one of those approaches is very good. So one of the things I've been looking at is shifting the approach, how I blog about and also how I share my rules and systems, okay? And I don't want to go into a whole lot of detail about this because there will be more to come as time goes on. But I am now starting to transition my writing style and design style over the next couple of months to what I'm going to call more of a design blogger approach rather than the straight up blogger that I have been thus far. What you're going to notice, among other things, is number one, the articles are going to get a little shorter. That's just necessary. I write too long. Okay, even for what I'm doing, I write too long, and there's a lot of crap that I don't need to do anymore. I don't need to have hypothetical arguments with my detractors. I don't, things of that nature. So, and you probably noticed that some of the recent articles have been a little bit shorter. And that is something that I plan to get. I'm never going to get down to like, oh, here's a 1,000-word article. I'm never going to be like the Alexandrian where I'm just going to, you know, like lightly brush against a topic, okay? Because I know one of the things people value is that I do the deep core analysis. But I'm also looking at different ways to structure my articles so that I can do the deep core analysis, but also give more of the stuff up front above the fold. And then if you just want to take the idea and then ignore the deep core analysis, you can do that, okay? The other thing is I would like the rules that I share, the rules and systems and hacks, to be in a more finished and polished state when I share them. While I have written a lot of systems and rules and hacks and things over the years, what I have never ever really done effectively is had a downloadable PDF that was just the rules document. You know, like I take the tension dice. There's not really a downloadable PDF that is just, if all you want is the rules of the tension dice, here they are, written out like any other instruction manual or any other rule book. Okay. I've never done that stuff. I've always blogged about the system I was developing or the rules that I was writing, given some examples, and then, you know, I let you just take those ideas and do what you want. And lots of people have told me, hey, I printed out all your stuff and compiled it into cheat sheets. I printed out all your stuff and made it into a thing I can reference. All of which tells me I'm not delivering something a lot of people need. So my goal as a design blogger is to continue to do the deep core analysis of the stuff I write, but also to actually, you know, maybe do the design first and put out a design, even if it's just a page of rules, because the actual systems I write are not very long or complicated, and then also provide the analysis. It does mean things are going to trickle out a little bit slower in terms of rules hacks, but it does mean I'll be able to get more complete stuff out. And one of the first experiments in this approach is going to be town mode, because with town mode, what I really need to do is put out a lot of little bits And then at the end say, now that you have all the little bits, here's how you can also use them to run a full town thing, incorporate all of the rules. So one week you might get rules on reputation, and you know, a couple of weeks later you'll get rules about how shops can level up, or how shopping rules, or crafting rules, or this or that or the other thing, or training rules. And then at the end, say 3 months later, I will assemble all the pieces for you and say, okay, now you have all the mechanical pieces, and here's how you would just run town mode using each of them. Of course, each little system is also separately usable in your game if you just want to have shopping rule or different shopping rules or whatever. There you go. So that is my plan for the first quarter of 2023. And meanwhile, I'm going to focus the next 2 months on cleaning up a lot of the a lot of one-off topics that I have promised, and using them as a way of refining my writing style to get it in line with where I want to be. Okay. Anyway, that was the serious shit. Little less serious that I'm going to switch to Q&A. Before I switch to Q&A, I'm going to mention. We are now using the threading system in Discord for Q&A specifically. So if you have a question that you would like to ask, as a child of the live chat text channel, you will see a live chat question thread. Go ahead and put your questions in there, and once it's time for question and answer, I will work through the questions. I have also allowed people to start piling up questions in advance, so we have plenty to get through. That also means I'm going to be a little bit more selective about the questions I answer, because there is a lot now to get through, and I could be here for 3 hours, which is not desirable either. You know, maybe it's desirable for some of you who are insane enough to listen to a 3-hour podcast of me yammering off the cuff answers to whatever questions people came up with. It's not desirable for me. But if you do have a question and it hasn't been typed into the question thread yet, now's the time to start typing it in, because I'm going to hit on my last topic, and that is this. I have two modules, sort of sitting here. Let's say that, you know, they're piled up in sort of a notebookish form. Okay. One is the short module I ran at the Angry Games Non-Con following up Fall of Silver Pine Watch. The other is an adaptation of a module I ran for my own Angry's Open World game. Which is sort of a go into the spirit forest and handle the spirits that have lost their shit because of reasons. In lieu of trying to cram theme packs into the end of the year, my intention is to give both of those modules write-ups and hand them both out for free. They're not going to be as big as Fall of Silver Pine Watch, not by a friggin' long shot. That module was a monster. Okay. But they're, it is my intention to turn them into actual PDFs, fairly well written up, not exhaustively, but certainly usefully for either people who want to see more stuff about the Angryverse, or people who would like the opportunity to run some modules or just have maps and custom monsters and pieces to pick apart and give them out in the next couple of months. Particularly, at least one will be a Christmas present to those of you who have been supporting at a high level and have been expecting theme packs and have not gotten theme packs because everything keeps falling apart, and then resume the theme pack stuff, you know, with the new year. But at least, hey, here's two free modules, and then, you know, in 3 months, I'll offer them up for sale in my store too, but there'll be there'll be exclusive content. Also, for those who do not get bonus content because of your support status, everybody who ran game, probably everyone who attended NonCon, everybody who attended NonCon is also going to get copies of both of those. Also, I know that there are some things I promised to send people who at NonCon, and they have not all gone out in the mail yet. I am working through that pile too. I have a bunch of stuff. You know, there's some people whose kids are expecting autographed books and things like that. It's all getting out. It's just a lot of little bits and pieces to work through. So it is happening. So anyway, with that said, I am now going to go through this pile of Q&A. And if I accidentally forget to read someone's name, somebody remind me that I didn't note who answered the question. And some of these I'm going to go lightning round style and just give quick answers to. I'm going to have to try and manage the time. Otherwise, like I said, I will be here tonight. Okay, so starting with October Foundry. Do monks exist in the Angryverse? If so, what sort of traditions do they follow? Monks do exist in the Angryverse because I have not banned monks as a class in the Angryverse. Okay. However, as far as what traditions they follow, I do not know because I have not ever had a monk in the, at least in the modern incarnation of the Angryverse. I do not indulge in lore masturbation. I do not figure shit out before I need it. When someone wants to play a monk, I will suddenly tell them what monks are like in my world and what sort of traditions are available to them and what role they fill in the world. And they will think that I had had this planned all in advance when really what I am really good at is just looking into my world and figuring out where things already fit. So I'm sorry, I do not know anything about monks in the Angryverse except that they must exist because I didn't say they don't. Noided, have you run games in the Angryverse that don't take place in the Western Kingdoms or Zathinia during the Age of Darkness? Are there other ages or regions like Alcott or Zhao, etc., mainly for set dressing for your preferred Dark Ages Europe type games? Yeah, I run medieval fantasy, okay? Medieval fantasy is, Dark Ages Europe. I mean, it's anywhere from Dark Ages to Renaissance, it's an anachronism stew, all that stuff, blah, 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 with occasional classic mythology thrown in. But look, end of the world, that's what I, or end of the world. End of the day, I run D&D, I'm running medieval fantasy, and I love medieval fantasy, and, you know, as far as, like, the history and traditions and cultures of the Western world, that's also my heritage. You know, all of that stuff has led to the society I live in today. It's what I'm familiar with. It's the ideas I like to explore. It's the things that have affected my life the most. So that's always going to be the setting. People have said, oh, you should run in Alcott or you should run in Zhao. And it's like, I mean, I might run a one-off there, but it's not something I'm going to spend a long campaign in, especially because it would require me to do a lot of research. Because, you know, I am not as familiar with those histories and cultures. They are not my history and they are not my culture. And all of the stuff in the Angryverse is inspired by, you know, my history and my culture. So, you know, it would require me to do a lot of legwork to even do it justice. So, yeah, I very rarely do. I very rarely move outside Western Aerith. Though Alcott, like, there's a lot of Alcott, Zathinia, and the Western Kingdoms, and the Sunderlands. So, you know, what you would consider Europe, the Mediterranean, the Middle East, and I guess what you would call like the Frankish and Viking kingdoms. Those are the themes that come up in my world. So Alcott does show up a lot. I don't think I've ever actually specifically run games in Alcott, though. I did have one group that got kind of close. Gondave, how do you handle different editions when playing in the Angryverse, assuming you don't have one universe per rule set and assuming the systems use the same genre? Honestly, the edition doesn't matter, okay? Like, the little differences in things like the mechanics of spell casting or shit, that really doesn't affect the entire world, okay? It just doesn't change the history of the world. The closest edition that ever came to really warping reality was 4th edition, just because it did magic so radically different from all the other editions. But interestingly enough, the first inception of what I would call the modern Angryverse, the one setting I used to rule them all, as it were, was actually the setting that I was running my fourth edition games in, which was based on the default setting for fourth edition, the Points of Light setting, not specifically Nentir Vale. I don't think I ever actually ran in Nentir Vale. But like, for example, Zithinia is actually based on Narath, the ancient human empire, in the fourth edition universe. But it's also based on, like, if Greece and Rome were kind of mushed together, kind of a, you know, that the classical military empire that, that conquered the world, and then the warlord wept because there was no world left to conquer. You know, that kind of a thing. Okay. Wiley, how would I start implementing armor and weapons breaking before the full article comes out? I wait for the article. Look, you're going to be disappointed in the article because it's basically just going to say break the shit at random and make it the player's problem. Like, you don't need systems. These systems they don't need to be that complicated, right? So it's like, how do you handle weapon and armor breaking? Sometimes weapons and armor break, and then they need to be fixed before they can be used. End of story. Okay? You can do a little stuff, and there will be little things, like when people maintain their equipment, it decreases the chance of breaking, but there is always the risk that something's going to break. You know, supplies get spoiled, equipment gets broken. It happens sometimes. It's basically a random screw job of the dice when you get down to it. It's pretty rare, but it does happen. And it's just something that you have to be prepared to deal with as an adventurer. Icebear 50, what's a good way to introduce town mode? Guided tutorial, open-ended, something in between. Open-ended is never a good way to introduce anything that complicated. But you're just going to have to wait for town mode. Ice Bear, are you dressing up for Halloween? If so, what? No. Canine Ein, question for the live chat tomorrow. Okay. As I'm working on my first Angry's open world game, I keep hearing about using factions in sandbox games. How do you use factions? See, and again, here we go. I don't need systems. Same way I do everything. Factions exist in the world. Factions, I assume, is a broad-based term for any organization that exists in the world. You know, any power structure, any power center. They exist, and they want things, and there are NPCs in them who want things, and, you know, NPCs are members of the factions, and they drive plots and things. There's nothing more to it than that. I know, for example, the Church of the Vasari exists, and they want certain things, but of course individual members may not exist, you know, may not have all the same goals as the member of the organization, as the organization itself, because all organizations are made of people, and ultimately an organization is just a team that share some values in common and some goals in common, but any individual may diverge from those goals to a greater or lesser extent, or may even oppose the goals of the organization and be a member of for reasons that advance themselves without really caring about the goals. That's always a thing that happens. As far as, do I have some sort of magical system of keeping track of which organizations exist and what their reputations are and how much power they can influence over the world? No. No, I don't. I just know there's these groups in the world, and I roughly know in my head how powerful they are. And otherwise, I just use them to drive plots. Stu, I've noticed this from the GM side and the player side. Notice what? You cannot use a reflexive pronoun before you, a demonstrative pronoun, this, whatever. You cannot use that before you identify the thing, or you should end that with a colon and then lead into the sentence so it's all one sentence. What's the least painful way to teach show players that not every NPC complaint is a quest, not every description of something has something to interact with, not every world lore is foreshadowing, not everything NPCs say is gospel, etc.? With all due respect, that's a completely back-asswards question, okay? Because that is not something I think I want to teach my players. Okay, first of all, like the whole point of having NPCs, I mean, I guess, okay, to some extent. Let's, but okay, backpedal, let me answer. Number one, The whole point of having NPCs is so that the players have these people to interact with, and so that they can drive the players to want to do things in the world and care about the outcomes. So absolutely, when an NPC is saying, gosh, this thing is happening to me and it sucks, I want my players to think, gosh, it's really sad and we care about that person. We'd like to help them with that problem. Okay? And on top of that, like, if the world lore is just sitting there doing nothing, if it's not foreshadowing, if it's not something that's going to come up, why are you wasting your time with it? Table time is valuable. This is like, it's the law of conservation of detail here. Players can only keep so much information in their heads. Why do you want to clutter that with shit that doesn't matter? You know, why are you wasting enough time describing things that aren't interactive that people want to interact with them? And most importantly, why are you dividing your world into that which you have decided the players should interact with and that which you have decided the players should not? The world is the world. You exist to describe it, and the players can interact with anything in any reasonable way that a person could interact with it. If you describe a pool of water, you cannot then say, I only meant that as flavor text. No, you can't drink from it. If your players want to drink from it, then don't put the pool of water in there. So I really, so that's my answer, is I can't tell you how to teach your players that. Because I'm striving to always teach my players the opposite. So in my open world game, the players, there was a woman who had been struck blind by a curse or a disease or something. Okay, it was related to the plot, but during the adventure, while the players solved the thing that was creating the curse, they were not able to find a way to cure her blindness. And the blindness has some sort of, ontological inertia, so that because the curse went away and the spirit stopped being angry, her vision didn't suddenly get better. Were there opportunities to cure her blindness in the adventure? Yes, absolutely there were. However, realizing she cannot live out on her own blind in the middle of the woods where she has been living, they found some NPCs who would adopt her and take her in their hometown. The players then started expressing sadness that they couldn't cure her blindness. And I pointed out to them, it's like she lives down the street. If you decide next week, gosh, you know what? Forget that adventure looting a tomb. Can we start researching how to cure her blindness? Can we hunt down a fifth level cleric who can cast remove blindness or whatever it is? That is a thing that not only can they do it, I would love for them to do stuff like that. So, and I told them as much. It's like, she's not anywhere. She hasn't gone anywhere. She's still there. She's a part of the world now. There were other side quests that came up during that main quest that the party put aside because they were focused more on the main quest. But the outcomes of those side quests have now played out in the world. There was a bounty hunter that tried to hire the party to get them help deal with some bandits. One of two things has now happened. Either that bounty hunter got himself killed because he went to confront the bandits without any backup, or maybe he defeated the bandits on his own because he really didn't need backup, or maybe the bandits are still there and they're going to be a bigger problem later. But the decision that they made to engage with or not engage with that plot, it has now had an impact on the world. And that could, like, it might never come up. Like, the bandits might never be a problem and the bounty hunter might never show up again. But it also could. And if the players went hunting for the bandits because they know where they are, or they went hunting for the bounty hunter, they could conceivably find them again. So, that's like the basic principle, by the way, of open world gaming, is the idea that, whatever direction the players decide to go in, whatever they decide to interact with, they should feel free to do so. And that your job is creating a sandbox. Okay, Noided is asking, what do you have in front of you when you run a game? How does your setup change in person versus online or between your different games? Okay, what I have in front of me. I'm actually, I should post a picture. I will post a picture of the notes from my non-con game, because people did ask me for a scan of them. They wanted to know what I actually had in front of me. When I sit down to run a game, and it really does not matter whether I'm running it online or running it in person, except for the form the things take, generally I will have some sort of scribbled summary of whatever information I think I need to make the adventure happen. So maybe it's a write out of the backstory that is creating the problem. Or maybe if I have actually come up with the different scenes and encounters in the adventure in advance, it's a quick list of, okay, the first scene is in the town, and then the players will do this, and if they go to this location, there's that. There may be a list of NPCs if I have some NPCs figured out in advance. It depends very heavily on what I have actually figured out in advance versus what I am prepared to pull out of my ass. And that varies very heavily from adventure to adventure. My schedule has become somewhat inconsistent running games, more due to me than my players. And so I have gotten into the habit of putting more down on paper than I otherwise would. But generally, it's just a few sheets of paper written out longhand that is just all the things I might think I need to remember to run the game that I think I'm going to run for at least the next session. If the adventure involves a complex location, like it's a site-based adventure where you're exploring a dungeon, then I will have a map of the dungeon, though it is usually like a sticks and lines type map. I don't necessarily map out my entire dungeon on graph paper, unless I am not prepared to pull a room out of my ass and put it onto paper. So if they were exploring a crypt and I wrote down the first room is like the antechamber, and then this side room is the embalming room, I don't need to give myself any more notes than that. I know what an embalming room is like. I know that there's going to be some number of work tables, and there are going to be urns of materials and shelves that contain linens and cloths and tools and things. And there is, and in one place, there is going to be a font beneath a shrine to a particular god or goddess of, you know, holy water to bless the dish, stuff like that. You know, like, I know what's in an embalming room. Everybody should know what's in an embalming room. You know, if a room is a crypt or a catacomb, I know in a crypt there's going to be sarcophagi arranged on the floors, or standing sarcophagi or whatever. And if it's a catacomb, it's going to be narrow hallways with shelves in the walls, and the alcoves contain the dead, right? Like, I don't need to map all this stuff and draw the details, because I've been GMing a long enough time that I know what goes into the various parts of a crypt or a tomb or a catacomb or what have you, you know, or a temple. And I'm very good at pulling halfway decent terrain for a combat out of thin air and throwing it down onto a battle mat with a pen and paper. Because online doesn't really facilitate quickly drawing a map. Okay, and I mean quickly, because I know somebody's going to point out things like, well, with Owlbear Rodeo, you could just drag a bunch of tiles and drop them. And it's like, yeah, if I want to take 5 minutes to drag and drop tiles, because yes, it takes minutes. It does not take seconds, okay? No matter how fast you are at it, okay? It takes minutes, not seconds, and that's inexcusable, okay? On a battle mat with a pen, I can draw a layout for a dungeon while I am describing that layout in a few quick seconds, like literally under a minute, okay? I can't do that online. So when I'm running games online, I do tend to take the time to come up with maps of the places where I intend to have encounters, or at least a bunch of generic maps. Like my party was recently adventuring in a forest, and I had like 6 different maps of just forest terrain, stream terrain, the cliffside terrain. I lost 2 maps, amazingly. I lost 2 maps which were major encounters I had planned. So I had all the generic maps. I don't know how I did it, because it's all in Fantasy Grounds and it should have been easy to find, but whatever. Anyway, so I have maps, and then I have monster stats. you know, based on whatever monsters I think are going to come up, or like whatever random monsters I think are going to come up, you know? So I have those stats handy. So that's it. That's what I have in front of me. It's basically just a stack of paper with the stuff that I can't pull out of my head. Okay. Otherwise, I do spend a lot of time thinking before the adventure about how I see the session going and who the characters are and what's setting things in motion. So, you know, there. That's it. Okay. Gandave, in an Adventure of the Week campaign with a varying cast of players, as described in the October 22nd Ask Angry every 3-hour session, one short mini-adventure, how do you handle town mode? If you leave it out, do you have something to replace it with? Okay, second question first. If you leave something out, you're not replacing it, you're leaving it out. And first question now, second, no, I don't handle town mode, because if the session is only 3 hours long and the players are rotating every week and then there's no room in that game for town mode. It's just going to have to go without the benefits of town mode. Okay. An adventure like that, or a setup like that, basically every session starts with the briefing, where whoever showed up that week is given their mission by whoever. And so here's the adventure. And then we transition right to the start of the adventure. And then we start adventuring, and then we have 3 hours to adventure. That's it. So, I mean, there's nothing more than that. I'm getting close to the end of the questions. Actually, rather than asking for a bunch more questions, it does look like I'm going to hold this to an hour miraculously. So I'm going to do that and say, if anybody's got, you know, I will take one or two more questions, but I'm going to hold myself to the hour ending time, which means, Proselis, give me 11 minutes on the clock. I'm going by my clock. So 11 minutes from my mark now. Okay. Nori, how can I get my players to, instead of looking for buttons to push when I present a scene, like asking to make X check or Y check, to just tell me what their character is doing so that I can adjudicate their action? I've spoken with them about it, but it seems like I haven't gotten through to them. Yeah, I understand. That is a very difficult thing, because that is no longer the natural mode that people play certain games of D&D specifically. And in fact, the article I put out today into Early Access was pretty much all about that and why it happens. And it's not your fault. It's the rule books that are doing it, because the rule books and the character sheets and everything in the game are telling the players that's how you play. If you want to break them of it, you need to do something extreme and take them out of one of these systems and run 3 months of, let's say, basic D&D or AD&D first or second edition. Okay, something where there are just literally no buttons to press, where they can't find the button, where they look for the buttons to press and there are none. Okay, do something like that. Run a game like that for 3 months, make them play it, and then when they come back to D&D, do not let them fall back into the habit by bonking them on the head every time they fall into the habit, and maybe it'll stick. But you're fighting a losing battle here, because the role-playing games are telling players that's how you play, and every other tabletop is telling players that's how you play. You can yell at them. I mean, I do yell at my players sometimes. Like, I cast the spell. Can you just at least, you know, it doesn't have to be fancy. You don't need to say a lot. Just tell me, you know, I make some gestures and throw some dust in the air and cast magic missile. Can you just do that for me? I think I said that to one of my players last night. It breaks my heart. Like I heal him for 4. Like, okay. You know what? You're a cleric. You know, could you treat your divine power with a little more reverence than you would give for an extra value meal? Whatever. Anyway. So yeah, I feel you. I don't have a good answer other than make them play a system that doesn't let them do that. Okay. Wiley, can you give me a list of subsystems buzzwords that will help to form town mode so I can begin BSing them into my games? No, I cannot. Okay. I am sorry. I still haven't figured out the list myself. One of the things that is happening in my own open world game is my players are finally getting back to town and I'm revising the way I run town there. I'm going to see how that goes for a little while before I even start trying to figure out what the list is, because I haven't yet identified the things I know this sounds bizarre, but I don't really know what I'm doing at my table. Okay, I know how to run a good game. And I know I do run a good game. I've come to grips with that. Like I keep saying to people, I am not a great GM. You know, there are many better GMs than me, and I'm a much better designer than I am a GM. And I stand by that. But I've never said I'm a terrible GM. I am a good GM. And looking at some of the feedback that I have gotten from people who participate in my games and the feedback that I got from people at NonCon has helped me really zero in on the aspects of what I do in my style that makes people walk away from my game saying, I had a really good time. This felt good. Okay. The thing is, everything I write about involves me basically analyzing my own style and figuring out the things I've just sort of been doing for years and then trying to codify that somehow. But the first step is also in a case like Town Mode where I say, okay, my players have always sort of enjoyed wandering around my towns. Sometimes a little bit too much, and sometimes I let it take up too much of the game. But for years and years and years of running games, I have noticed my players don't zone out in town. And they don't just run away from town. It's like, okay, let's just sell our shit, get the next mission, and go. They like to take their time in town. They find my towns interesting. They, you know, for one reason or another, okay? I want to give everybody the opportunity to have that at their table, which means I have to figure out what the hell is it about what I'm doing that makes that enjoyable for people so that then I can help everybody else. But at the same time, I also need to refine it a little bit because I can't just tell people it's like, hey, you know, I just sort of pull this out of my ass and do it. You know, I've been doing this for a lot of years. Okay, I've been doing the GMing thing for 35 years now. That's a long time to build a style without analyzing it. And I have not started analyzing it until the last 10 years. Okay, so I've spent a lot more time not analyzing my style than I have spent analyzing it. Okay, so one of the things I need to do when I identify something that I would like to turn into a system or a lesson or an article or whatever, the first thing I have to do is then try to refine it. Because what I'm doing at my table is clumsy and half-assed, because that's how I run games. I have a very chill style. I like to just, you know, go with it. That doesn't work for everybody. So what I need to do then is start tinkering with my own towns to see what stuff matters and what stuff doesn't, and if there are better ways to do those things. Then I can turn around and come back. This is why I can get blindsided by the idea that something like Town Mode isn't just a design philosophy, which a couple of months ago I assumed I just, you know, it was just the way I put together and present Town that made Town fun in my world. And if I just did more of that, that would be good. I realized there were lots of little mechanical bits I was doing behind the scenes that was also making Town work. I kind of have to deconstruct what I'm doing before I can tell anybody else how to do it. So that's why you gotta wait, okay? It's an alchemy, or it's black magic, really. All right, so that is the list of questions, and I think I have enough time to say goodnight to everybody. I'm sorry, I know everybody's really excited about Town Mode. I am too. It's something I really wanna get right. It's something that's really important for me because I also think it's going to be really important in SmathArch for itself as Town Mode, but also for what it teaches about how to build a role-playing game as more than just a series of moments. Okay, right now, there are only two modes of play in D&D. There is combat, and there is a series of moments, right? So then you see the thing. What do you do? I do the thing. Okay, this is the outcome. Now what do you do? I do the thing. This is the outcome. Okay, that's all there is to D&D right now. And most role-playing games, honestly. Or the alternative is the role-playing games that are not just combat and a series of moments abstract the hell out of everything they do so badly that it's not really recognizable as a simulation of the thing. Instead, it is a game in its own right that claims to be about the thing that it's claiming to be about. You know, people like, oh, the heist mechanics in Blades in the Dark are a fun game to play that have absolutely nothing to do with what it would be like to actually, you know, put together a heist. You know, most of it is various ways of you be, it's like Blades in the Dark lets you play a heist movie. Okay. That's what it does, which is not the same as pulling off a heist. And that's an important distinction, but that's it for another time. Anywho, so with that said, I'm going to say goodnight for now. I know that I've been vague about a few things, I know that I kind of rushed through the questions and I promised an hour and a half and now I'm only going back to an hour, but things just worked out that way. I will have more to say next month. There are some things coming. I am going to say this, currently there are two projects that will be coming to Kickstarter in 2023. If you've been attentive, you know what both of them are, but they both have to happen. It's funny because basically what I've just said is I'm going to give you the opportunity to fund me twice next year in addition to the financial support. And nonetheless, I know I'm going to have people who are like, oh boy, I'm the luckiest damn guy in the world. I really am. And honestly, NonCon drove that home as much as anything else. You know, that was something, I'm going to say that I got a number of emails from people who observed that actually meeting other members of the community and spending time together and realizing what an amazing community we have and what great friendly people we have who are all just a delight to be around, that was their big takeaway from NonCon, that it's just, you know, this community, apart from the asshole who runs it, is full of really great people who are amazing to spend a weekend together gaming with. So I can't take credit for that. Once again, I have to thank absolutely everyone who is here for making this whole community so awesome. The GMs, the people who helped me put it together, and of course, absolutely every one of you who showed up there. And just, you know, you were fun, you showed up to games, you played games, and you shared your games and shared your experiences. It was, you know, that's what made the event so great. It's the people who were in the community, and it wouldn't have mattered where we were or what we were doing. And I think if I had another one of these in the Southwest or whatever, and got a whole bunch of other people, I would get exactly the same emails. So thank you to everyone. Thank you, of course, to everyone for your ongoing support, your encouragement, your patience. I know this year has been kind of a mess. The last couple of years have been a mess in the world. And I know you've put up with a lot more shit from me than usual. And I appreciate that. I'm hoping to end the year strong and then launch into a really powerful 2023. And I'm really hoping I have something exciting, let's say 3.5 weeks from now.